Support for Commodity Week Online comes from Strategic Farm Marketing, now offering a fall look-back option that will add 50 cents per bushel to your revenue claim. Details at sfarmmarketing.com.
From the land of Grand Theft University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the March 14 edition of Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This week, the soybean market failed, dropping 81.5 cents in the lead option March contract to settle at $13.76 Friday over Friday. We'll ask why that happened to Dale Durkles of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois, Greg Johnson from the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, and Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, as well as our special guest, Michael Cordonier. He's with a Soybean and Corn Advisor out of Hinsdale, Illinois. I'd like to begin our discussion actually with Michael Cordonier this time around because he is directly back from South America, arriving not this past Wednesday, but the previous Wednesday, and where he was touring the growing regions. Michael Cordonier, thank you for being on the show. What did you find when you were in South America? Well, Dr. Cordonier apparently is not with us. I'll try to catch up with him in just a bit. Let's see if I've got him somewhere else. No, we'll find him momentarily. So let's go on to the rest of the crew and begin, Mike Zuzolo, with you, because I want to bring up this 81.5 cent drop in the soybean market. It finished at $13.76. That was an extraordinary drop.
It was, and I think, you know, Todd, we do have some conclusive evidence that China's demand is starting to soften. We've talked about it for a better part of a month, but we did get some new information out on their animal feed production and demand for 2013 from the U.S. government, and it did show that their broiler meat poultry numbers were down 8.4% as far as their feeding. Their layer hens were down 5.5% for 2013. Those two things make up about a little over 40% of their total feed demand, especially when it comes to the soybean meal. So I think between those numbers and the confirmation of some cancellations, it made sense that if you didn't get the bull to be fed from the report on the supply-demand numbers Monday, you were probably going to have to find some technical selling and some fundamentally led selling because of this weaker demand showing up.
Dale Durkles, your view?
Well, you know, everything that Mike mentioned has a lot of merit at this point. You know, and like he said, you know, these rumors and the talk have been around for the better part of the month. You know, over the last week, I find it kind of interesting, just to add to it, the basis level down at Paranagua has fallen a little over 30 cents a bushel, and today rests down at about 20, 25 cents underneath Chicago futures. So you can start to understand cash market down there is getting soft, and we've got to put all this in perspective. If China actually has canceled some cargoes, they're asking for cancellations and or delays on other. All this is coming when you have their new crop really pushing to port itself. So, you know, to me, the real lead market at this point in time in the bean complex is what goes on in Paranagua.
And Greg Johnson, how did the basis for soybeans manage to react for the week?
Well, basis is actually picking up because there's not very many beans left to sell, and then when you have a 60 to 80 cent drop in the futures price, the farmers that still do have beans are being tight holders. So, you know, farmers are asking why so much, and I just say we've been up 5 weeks in a row. This is the first week that beans have not been higher. Just not even two months ago, beans were $2 lower. So we had a $2 rally in the nearby month, and so I guess nobody likes to see 60, 80 cents lower, but we have had a $2 run-up in prices, and so, you know, it just can't go up forever.
Let me check again. I believe Michael Cordonier should be on the phone line from Hinsdale now. Good afternoon to you, Michael.
Good afternoon.
Tell me about your trip to South America.
Well, we were down there for about 2.5 weeks and just got back last week. And I think the news this week in Brazil was Conab, just lowered their Brazil soybean estimate 4.5 million tons. Now, I was at 80, down to 85.4 million. I was at 87 million, so it came in below my estimate. Now, their stated reason, which I agree, was very hot, dry conditions in January and February in Paraná, Goiás, Minas Gerais, sort of the east and the southeast part of the country. And now they've had some rain during the harvest in Mato Grosso. When we were in Mato Grosso, it rained almost every day. They have lots of trouble. There's bridges underwater. There's roads washed out. So they had a lot of trouble trying to get the soybeans harvested. And I think this CONAB number might actually move a little bit lower before it's all said and done.
Dale, do you have a question?
You know, one thing I picked up after that report was out, Michael, was there were some comments from some individuals down there, it might have been government officials, that kind of alluded to the fact that they expect when they put out their number a month from now, it could end up being maybe a little higher than what they projected on Monday.
Well, a couple of things. They increased the soybean acreage, 134,000 hectares from last month. Now, I'm assuming that is Safrinha soybean production, but they did not say one way or the other. So if they would include, you know, that Safrinha in the next crop, you know, it might go up a little bit. Another thing they commented on was the uncertainty for the Safrinha corn. And they actually raised the Safrinha corn just a little bit, which was a surprise. I expected it to go down. But they said in their comments that, you know, they're late planting the Safrinha corn. We're uncertain how many acres are out there. So we're going to yet to be determined, so to speak, the Safrinha corn. So this the Safrinha situation is a little bit unclear at the present time.
Dr. Cordonier, trying to look at the big picture, we kind of understand that this crop in Brazil is not as good as it was a month ago, but in the big picture, over the last 5 or 6 years, how would you rate this crop on a scale of 1 to 10 compared to the last 5 or 6 years, both in terms of acres and maybe in term of yield?
Well, acres, it's an all-time record. It went up like about 11%. So there's no doubt that would be rated like a 10 as far as acreage goes. Yields are just a little bit off of what you would expect, and that's due to the problem down the south. So I would give the yield rating for this crop maybe on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being best, I give it like a 4 or 5, a little bit below par. And basically only the state of Mato Grosso had above normal precip during January and February. And the biggest cut came in the second biggest state, which is Paraná. And in the northern part of that state, they lost about 40% of their soybean crop in that northern region of Paraná. So that was a little bit disappointing. Now, I don't want to be too critical here. It is going to be a record crop. Last year's record was 82 and change, and now CONAB has them at 85.4. So by all stretch of the imagination, it is still going to be a record crop out of Brazil.
On that note, Dr. Cordonier, is this one of those years where it's going to take us until May, June to get a firm number of what the production actually is with Brazil, I think just getting over the 50% mark harvested here this past week?
Yes, it's going to be a little bit wild, and that's because of the Safrinha soybeans and how many acres are out there. You know, we saw it all over the place, you know, second crop soybeans planted back-to-back. I think it's kind of interesting. In CONAB's report, they gave two complete paragraphs to the Safrinha soybeans, and they were very critical. They said, you know, you should not have done this. All the experts say don't do it. There's already some beans lost completely this second crop because of insects and worms and diseases. And then they grudgingly admitted that, yes, there is some Safrinha soybeans, and if this trend continues, we may have to start a separate sort of analysis on Safrinha soybeans next growing season. But they left the distinct impression that the farmers should not have done back-to-back soybean crops.
Have you made an assessment of the corn crop in South America?
For Brazil, I'm at 68.5 million tons. Now, CONAB stayed at 75 million. The USDA is 70. So I'm way down, and I'm down because I think there's going to be a 10 to 15% reduction in Safrinha acreage for corn. And a lot of this corn is planted very late, and late planted corn runs a risk of running out of moisture, you know, when a dry season approaches. So that kind of remains to be seen. Now, CONAB mentioned that they're very uncertain about the Safrinha corn crop, and I kind of read that as saying when we get better information in a month or two, I think their numbers are going to come down. They're definitely higher than anybody else as far as Safrinha corn production is concerned.
And can I have you, and I'll bring the rest of the folks back into this conversation so that they can answer these questions as well. Give me an assessment of South America, Brazil, and Argentina's ability to export both corn and soybeans in the coming year, how that may differ from previous years, and what bottlenecks they might have.
Okay, right now, Brazil, I think, is actually doing pretty good. They exported 2.7 million tons of soybeans in February, which was a record. And for the month of March, it might be 5.5 million tons of soybeans. As we speak, there's about 104 vessels waiting to load soybeans and soybean meal at Brazilian ports. Now you think, wow, that's a lot of vessels. But it's down about 20% from last year when 130 vessels were waiting. Now at Brazil, I think they did some good things at the ports. First of all, they limited corn coming into the port starting in mid-January, so freeing up more space for soybeans, which was good. And then second, at Paranaguá, they put in an express line. So if a vessel is going to load from three warehouses or less, they get into the express line. And they say that alone could increase 10% the efficiency in Paranaguá. Now, in Argentina, right now, in fact, just yesterday, they had a ship run aground in the Paraná River, which is kind of slowing movement of vessels. And there's also talk of labor unrest at Argentina ports. Of course, inflation is running about 30%. The labor unions only have yearly contracts, so they want a big, hefty increase in their wages. So we'll see if they get it or not. But I do expect some labor issues to be somewhat of a slowdown at Argentine ports.
Dale, when you consider what Dr. Cordonio Ayres told us about the South American crop, how it's moving through the system, what does it tell you about the export market from there, how quickly that has or is already showing up in the price of corn and beans, and whether corn exports can manage to hang on for very much longer?
You know, the bean thing I addressed really when we started up the first part, and I said, you know, we'd had the basis level break down in Paranaguá about 30 cents.
Right.
And I think that's really indicative of what's going on at this point, in that, you know, you do have this problem with Chinese cancellations and requests for delays, et cetera. And at the same time, you do have crops coming to port. So, you know, it that's why I say, you know, the port price down in Brazil, to me, is probably the controlling price as far as beans are concerned. Corn out of that part of the world here, Brazil in particular, is never really a big item as far as exports are concerned. That really tends to be a old midsummer, late summer phenomenon when they really ship their corn out, the big export push, because a lot of that comes out of the Safrinha crop itself. So corn's really not going to have an impact out of South America.
Take up the wheat market for me, Mike. It's had an interesting ride as of recent.
Well, I think it's based on a lot of unrest in Ukraine and fear that there may be some disruptions in their exports and that sort of thing. And with Russia massing troops on the border of Ukraine, that might be a legitimate fear at this point. And on top of it, I think we have, you know, rather dry conditions for the hard red winter in the southern plains. And then for the soft red winter, you saw the, I think it was the millers, reduce their estimate for the soft red winter. So wheat seems to be the commodity of choice present time for speculators, and maybe rightly so.
And Zuzula, would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I think the big thing that we got to keep in mind as we get into the springtime field work is that, you know, Ukraine will pump out 25 million tons of corn and ship out 15 of that, Todd, and they've become the number two world grain exporter, and you've been over there. You've seen what their that black dirt, as they call it, in Europe and their breadbasket of Europe is like. And so there's a lot riding on this situation, because you could theoretically, especially given that there were some rumors on Friday that Russia was going to monkey around with multinational grain firms in Russia, and theoretically then in the Crimea and also then the Ukraine, they were going to monkey around with them and make them a little bit more state-controlled. There's a lot riding on the world supply-demand, because they have been in the Ukraine and Russia a major player as far as why we haven't been able to get the corn exports and the wheat exports into the Middle East this past 10 years.
Dale, a disruption from that area will cause what kinds of problems?
Problems we can't even figure out at this particular point in time, but disruptions from there, basically, they do put a level of support underneath demand for U.S. corn in particular in the export trade, because when you look at corn or wheat, you know, wheat, you got a lot of different areas around the world where you can source wheat from, but when you start talking about corn exports in the world, the U.S. is such a huge dominant player that it does force more of the business back into our marketplace itself.
Greg Johnson, what has movement for corn been like in the last week?
Well, in the last 3 weeks, it's been very heavy. There's farmers, we're sitting on a lot of old crop corn, and they were very, very concerned when corn got down into the low $4 range there in mid-January. Since then, we've had a nice 80-cent rally in corn, and farmers are doing the right thing. They're responding, and they are selling corn into this rally, mainly old crop corn. We've bought very little new crop corn, but farmers are selling old crop corn, and as a result, we have seen corn basis weaken a little bit.
Are you still behind what you think sales should be?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, there's still probably 35% of the old crop corn still left to be sold. So yeah, they've done a good job. I think we were only 30% sold a month and a half ago, and now we're 65% sold. So we've bought a lot of corn just in a short period of time, 5 to 6 weeks.
And does that give you concern that there's more break yet to come?
Probably more so in the beans than the corn. I mean, okay. the farmers are selling old crop corn, so you know we're getting that move through the system. And the new crop corn, even though they haven't sold any, I think people want to wait and see that acreage number on March 31 before, and see what the weather does this spring before they get too excited about selling new crop corn.
Yeah, I was thinking, Dale, about the amount of corn that farmers still had in their hands, not that was sold, and he was telling me that there was more than usual still.
No doubt about it, you know, but when you look at where we started this year, you know, going into harvest, you know, farmers were thought to be roughly about 10% sold on new crop across the Midwest, and that was unusually light because normally they have 30, maybe 35% of that crop booked by the time they start harvest. So they have been behind from the word go here, you know, even as we said today, like Greg said, you know, you're still behind a normal pace, but they started so far behind it takes a long time really to get caught up.
Is there a difference, Mike Zuzulo, from one side of the Midwest to the other as to how much corn might be available?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the guys in Iowa still have quite a bit, like the people in Illinois do and Indiana do, but I think as you get into some of those states that showed yield declines in that last USDA report that we saw at the end of December and then again in January when they updated, I think those numbers are pretty accurate at this point, Todd. I don't think there's a lot of producers west of the Mississippi that are sitting on an abnormally large percentage of their old crop corn, unless maybe you get into the areas of Iowa that had really good yields. But there were lots of people in Minnesota and Iowa that did not have really good yields and are not sitting on anything more than they normally are right now.
You, of course, are listening to Commodity Week. Our panelists include Mike Zuzulo, who you just heard from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, Greg Johnsons of the Andersons and Dale Durkles of AgriVisor, LLC. Our guest today, Michael Cordonier. He is with Soybean and Corn Advisor out of Hinsdale, Illinois.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
This program is a production of Illinois Public Media. Now here's the weather forecast with meteorologist Ed Kieser.
The vernal equinox is coming next Thursday. Soon nights will be longer than days across South American production areas, a sure sign that the growing season is starting to wind down. In Argentina, almost half of the sunflower crop has already been harvested, but corn harvesting is just getting underway, still well under 10%. Showers and thunderstorms return Thursday night and Friday. That'll keep harvest slow for at least a few days, then several days of dry weather are expected going into next week. But occasional fronts the rest of the month will trigger showers and thunderstorms at times. While harvest is starting out a bit slow in Argentina, it's still early, so rain at this point is more of a nuisance than a problem. Moving northward into Paraguay and South Brazil, including Rio Grande do Sul, Santa Catarina, and Paraná, the weather pattern is looking wet in the coming week. Above normal rainfall will stop field work, including harvesting. However, rain will benefit second season corn, especially in Paraná, where almost a third of the second season corn is grown. In center-west Brazil, rainfall has been adequate to surplus of late. Drier weather in the coming weeks should boost harvest progress of full-season crops across Mato Grosso do Sul, Mato Grosso, and Goiás. Since rainfall has been sufficient of late, the drier weather should not hurt second-season crops. Finally, to the east, across Minas Gerais, Sao Paulo, and Bahia, scattered showers and thunderstorms this week brought a much-needed drink of water for crops. Drought started in mid-January, and it appears that dry weather will take hold again next week and beyond. Second crops across the area will continue to struggle. Overall, they account for less than 5% of Brazil's production, but the season is ending on a tough note for producers in that area.
Ed Keezer, agricultural meteorologist. Here the way the numbers settled in Chicago with the weekly changes. March corn at 486 and a quarter on its high for the week. Low at 468 and a quarter. Settlement price at $4.72 and a quarter a bushel, down 8 3/4 in December at 487 and a quarter, 2.5 cents higher. Beans in the March contract at $14.51 and a quarter top. Bottom on the week at 13.63 and a half, and a settlement price 81.5 cents lower than the previous Friday at $13.76. November contract at 11.74 and a half, down 12 3/4. March soybean meal at $4.49, down $16. March bean oil at $42.02, that's down $2.07. Soft red winter wheat in the March contract is $7.75 top, bottom at $6.43, settled up 44 at $6.90 and a quarter in the March. July at $7.03 and a quarter, up 28 cents for the week. April live cattle at $145.25, or $2 higher on the week. April feeders at $177.22 and a half. Gap tire for the week finished $3.57 and a half cents higher than last Friday. And April lean hogs were up $6.30 for the week at $119.30. They were down at $90 in the month of January. The program comes to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 and Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
This edition of the program, of course, was recorded on the 14th day of March. Dr. Cordonier, I'd like to have your best set of advice for producers at this time for both old and new crop corn.
Well, quite frankly, I don't do much advising on pricing and selling and that sort of thing. But, you know, right now there was, of course, Allendale came out with estimates for the acreage. It looked like soybean area is going to be way up. I don't know if I quite agree with that big of an acreage swing. But the weather during April here is going to be very important. Of course, we're coming out of a very long, cold winter. Frost is really deep, so it's going to take a while. If April turns out to be cool and wet, then I think that's going to favor even fewer corn acres and more soybeans. And then the reverse, if we have a nice warm April, everybody will say, thank goodness, and then it might favor maybe not quite as big a drop in the corn acreage.
Dale Nurkels, your thought process on pricing out all the new crop that you have available?
On the corn?
Yep.
You know, on the corn at this point, I think given what's happened in the market, you know, it depends partially also where the producer is at. I went into harvest and had people roughly about half sold in that regard. you know, I'm getting them up to 75-80% sold on the old crop. Now, I don't know that the corn market's totally dead yet. You know, you still got some risk, not only with the spring, but maybe even on into summer. So you still hold a good chunk of corn in the old crop for that. New crop, I'm about 25% priced at this juncture, and I think right now I'm going to hold the line until I see how the market unfolds, especially with how things unfold in the Ukraine this weekend. But even with the risk we have going into spring about planting, how fast, how much, I think I can go a little slow at this point in time, but I think not having 25% or so on the books at these levels is foolish.
Mike Suzalem?
Yeah, I'm in the same camp as Dale. I think you got to get some paper hedges on at this point in time. I think short-term, Todd, we're sitting in a situation where you're kind of going to have to feed the bull in corn. You've got weather in the Ukraine that can do that, but I think wheat has made a major move, and it's probably getting a little bit long in the tooth as far as being able to go any higher. It could, because of the Ukrainian situation and because of the hard red wheat weather like Dr. Cordonnier talked about, but I do feel like that this is a good place to get some paper hedges in place. Basis is too wide for me in new crop corn to really recommend a lot of cash forward selling. I will have to say also, this week with the PED virus and the brand new highs in the hogs and the way it seemed to support the corn and the meal reminded me of 1996-97 when we had the belly-led rally that led the hogs higher that also helped the corn. And I think this is something that needs to be watched as well. As we keep seeing hogs make new highs, that may actually underpin some of these prices in the longer term as well.
And to Greg Johnson.
Yeah, I think on old crop corn, we need to take advantage of this. We've had a range of as low as 420 on the nearby contract up to $5, and we're at 486 today on the May. So we're closer to the top than the bottom. Can we get a little bit more out of the corn if wheat goes up because of the Ukraine problems? Sure, as Dale said. But when you get to five, there's just a lot more things that can go wrong than can go right. So I think farmers just need to keep selling into it like they have been. And the new crop corn, you know, we are going to see less acres of corn, more acres of beans, but it's just hard for me to imagine that corn doesn't get some pressure. If we really have 5-6 million more acres of beans, the beans are going to go down, you know, quite a bit, and that probably will serve to drag corn down. So, you know, maybe corn doesn't go down as much percentage-wise, but I don't see it going up a whole lot more either.
And a final word from each of you. We'll make it very quick. Del Dirkles.
One thing up in here, I'm seeing some things on a very short-term basis that tell me this general move up in commodity prices might be getting kind of tired.
And Mike Zuzalo?
One of the big things to watch in the end of the year, Todd, I think, is the return to deflation in the global economy because of what we're experiencing right now.
And Greg Johnson.
The funds were a record short in corn 2 months ago. They've covered that short, and they're not record long, but they're extremely long, so fade the funds and take advantage of this rally.
All right, thanks to Greg Johnson of the Andersons, Mike Zuzalo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, and Dale Dirkles of AgriVisor, along with Michael Cordonnier of Soybean and Corn Advisor. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.